Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Nunes' hands are down, and she's walking Ronda down. She tags her again.
Over and over, Amanda Nunes.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another. But I'm going to get the job done.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide on WBC TV. Often imitated, but hardly duplicated. 37, make that 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. In this hour, of course, this is hour number two of our Sunday edition. Sunday, of course, comes to you at 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2 hours live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel, and like 1,000 other internet platforms. Bottom line is, this is hour number two of our Sunday show. Of course, Saturday we come to you as well at 11 a.m. Pacific time. So remember this, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time, 2 p.m. Eastern time, the same channels, Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Now, straight up, last night, of course, there were a couple of great fights, or a couple of good fights, a couple of great fights. I don't know. It was a night full of boxing. Guess what? There were some fights on TV that people were interested in. That's what's cool. People are interested in boxing again. Of course, three sold-out fight cards. Larry Merchant talked about that in hour number one. The fact that three different venues sold out, I think that's great. I think that says, that speaks volumes for the game, of course. And, you know, people are emerging from the pandemic. Most people are getting vaccinated. For those of you that didn't, I don't know what to say, but the bottom line is for those of us that have, we can go out in public and feel pretty comfortable as far as this COVID stuff is concerned. So COVID is in the rearview mirror as far as boxing fans are concerned, I hope. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. In this hour of Ring Talk, I bring in the great Alexis Arguello and, of course, David Benavidez, the winner last night, of course, in a fight on the zones. Take it back, Showtime. So we'll hear from David and we'll hear, of course, from the great Alexis Arguello today on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Just yearn for the girl, whoever she may.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
37 long years we have been together. Not five, Lenny. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing and a little MMA. We'll touch on the UFC a little bit later, of course. I want to. Somebody said to me, how bad was that beating Alicia Bumgarner gave on Terry Harper? Put it this way, if they were gay, she would have been arrested for not a domestic violence, attempted murder. I mean, it was like, yikes, man. Yikes. It was one of those beatings that if the referee not been there at the right time, this girl would have been seriously and maybe permanently hurt. So props to the referee. We'll try to get his name a little bit later. Now, last night, David Benavidez, of course, the heir apparent to greatness. Or is he? Is he really the Mexican-American answer to Canelo Alvarez? Of course, Canelo Alvarez being the Mexican superstar, the pound-for-pound king, a once-beaten fighter with one draw. Of course, a once-loss to Floyd Mayweather back when he was green as guacamole. He was successful last week against Caleb Plant. Plant came in at 21 and zip, something like 15, 16. Anyway, he was a fair fighter, there's no doubt about it. Of course, he negotiated himself into a $10 million payday. And whether you want to realize it or not, belts aren't worth spit. Take the back. Diego Corrales, the ex-world champion from Sacramento, California, two-division champion, of course, a guy that lost his life in a motorcycle accident, his belt was worth about $350. That's what he pawned it for in Las Vegas, $350. So belts aren't worth spit. Money. Professional boxing is about making money. And, you know, Plant made $10 million last week. $10 million to get it. I mean, I'm not trying to say that he didn't deserve it. I'm just trying to say he made $10 million. People say to me, how much is he worth? How much can you get? I mean, as a private investigator, as a radio talk show, you get what you can, right? This is no doubt about that. But back to that women's fight yesterday. Holy cow, she is a new WBC 130-pound champion. She's Alicia Bumgarner, who's 11-1 with one draw. And, of course, Terry Harper was coming in undefeated. She was the the defending champion from the UK. This took place in the UK on DAZN. So it was quite an upset. She was a 5 or 6 to 1 underdog as far as the sports were concerned. So we give Ms. Bumgarner the best. In fact, Bumgarner, you guys might remember James Garner in the Rockford Files. His real name was Bumgarner. And that's what his real name was. So he had to change it for television. He can go, this is James Bumgarner. That wouldn't work too much. Anyway, changed it to James Garner. Of course, James Garner, of course, went on to become the star of the Rockford Files and Maverick and all kinds of crazy stuff. Now, back to boxing. David Benavidez. You know, I look at him and I think, man, he's got skills. He's got height. He's got reach. He's got flaws. How many flaws? How apparent are his flaws? Well, let's hear from David first.
How the hell was Tyrone Davis able to hold up to all that those combinations, man?
He's a warrior, bro. I mean, you don't got to take it away from him. He's a warrior, but I feel like, has he been knocked out before?
No.
He's never been. When they don't get, they've never been knocked out, they'll really try their hardest not to get knocked out. And I mean, I knew I was going to take him out eventually, you know, because that's the way I work. You know, when I put the pressure on, I don't let off or at nothing. And, you know, I feel like I get better as the fights go on. You know, I throw more punches, land more. But, I mean, hats off to Davis. But I feel like as long as you remain calm, you don't get frustrated, you don't get the knockouts fast, that's the key to it. You know, you can't make mistakes just because you're looking to get a knockout. You know, I didn't make any mistakes. I was touching him. I kept my distance. Everything was good, and I did what I was supposed to do.
Yeah. Just, again, the patience, man. Where's that coming from? You know, again, usually you start off 70 punches the first round, but you took your time with this guy.
Well, you know what I wanted to do, because I didn't want to let the fans get to me, you know, and it's crazy, but it's good that I think like that. You know, I know a lot of people wanted me to go in there, throw everything the first, but I wanted to stay disciplined, you know, because that's really when it matters. You have to learn. I'm maturing, too, and I think it for the longevity of my career, it's better. You have to relax, and the knockout is going to come. You just, the fans have to wait a little bit, but, you know, I feel like I did a tremendous job.
Why didn't you use the jab much tonight? You didn't need it.
Because that's why, because sometimes I fight fighters, and I'm not landing at first, but until I start opening up with the jab, but this dude was just available with so much shots, you know, I feel like that's why, you know, I didn't really need the jab too much, but I should have threw more. But I mean, everything worked out perfectly.
I'm sure you read about what the fans say when they break down this Canelo fight. They say the body shots will kill David. He'll get underneath and get to the body. What's your response to that? Why won't that get it done?
Happens, you know what I mean? Everybody says the same shit over and over again. I get hit too much. I don't have this and that. I really don't get hit. You know what I mean? But you craft a game plan for each fighter. You know, I know Tyrone Davis didn't throw body shots like this. You know, if I knew he would throw body shots like that, it would have been different. I would have been stepping out, doing different stuff. Or I would have been throwing more jabs. Because once a fighter throws body shots, you counter that with the jab. You know what I mean? So that's what takes the body shots away. But, I mean, people are going to say, people that be talking the most don't know anything about boxing. Watch boxing on TV and they think they know everything. But I'm really in there working. I'm working with multiple sparring partners. I'm doing a lot of stuff, so I'll be good. I don't need their advice.
You know, lately Canelo's, he's just had these nukes at 168.
Yeah.
Are you the only guy who's got something for his ass? He's got a nuke.
Yeah, I got
it. Like,
yeah, exactly. I got a lot of power too, and I throw punches and bunches, and I don't get tired. So I think that's the best thing about me. My stamina is crazy.
David Benavidez, talking about his stamina being crazy. He will need to be once Canelo starts cracking him to the body. Now, will this fight take place? As I said earlier, if I was Canelo Alvarez, I would want this fight to take place now. And why do I say now? Is this because he isn't developed into the fighter he might be able to be? I'm talking about David Benavidez. In other words, he's a little green still. He can punch. He can box. He didn't work the jab last night. A lot of things he didn't do last night. Of course, the footwork. All the boxing experts, all these trainers are telling me this morning, footwork. He has no footwork. You can't win. He's not the complete package. They're trying to say, well, you don't have to be the complete package sometimes in boxing if you can punch. I mean, Deontay Wilder, case in point, right? He's nowhere the complete package as a heavyweight yet. The 2004 Olympic bronze medalist and the former WBC heavyweight title holder, of course, went like 40 and 40 fights with no losses. But then again, he fought 40 guys like me for the most part, fought a lot of stiffs. But, you know, I mean, he's one-dimensional. All he's got is that right hand. He's got nothing else. He's got no footwork. He's got no jab. He doesn't work to the body well. I can go on and on and on and on about all his deficiencies. But yet it was enough to catapult him to the WBC title and to hold on to it for a while. Why? Because he could punch. So can Benavidez punch like that? Probably not so much, but he's got some height. I think he's got a little height on Canelo, a little range on Canelo as far as the height and the reach is concerned. So it should be interesting. But if I was Canelo Alvarez, I want to take that on right away. Now, want to mention
Something went up on Facebook. Somebody shot, Rob Hernandez shot me some video of me in Irvine, California. I think it was in 1989. I was doing some TV down there working for the Z Channel. And there was a big controversy involving the Z Channel because I had this pimp little mustache. And the reason why I bring it up is that somebody shot me a picture, so I put it up on the Facebook. Anyway, it was like a Joe Gilardi, a little zoot suit type of mustache. And it was Joe Gilardi's, you know, it was a Joe Gilardi special. I called it Joe Gilardi, was one of my heroes back then. Anyway, so I had some attitude in this 1980s mustache. So this Jewish producer, he like took me to task down there at Irvine, California, and like he would be telling me in my ear, in other words, I'm about to interview a fighter, I'm about to do some, Pedro, you got to get rid of that mustache. I mean, he would like, you know, he's harping on me during the show, listening. So we went back and forth about it. You know, I had an agent, Martin, I can't remember what his last name was, here in San Francisco, and he was Jewish as well. And he told me to shave the mustache off. Pete, just shave the mustache off. I told him, why? You got me a contract with these people, man. What do you mean? I have a contract. They can't fire me over a mustache, especially not over a mustache. So he goes, shave it off, Pete. Just shave the mustache off. So I refused. I wouldn't do it. So anyway, they offered me $200 to shave off the mustache, and it came off in an instant. That's just the way it went down. Money talks, but in that instance, I didn't want to hear any more of the guy's smack. I mean, imagine this. You're setting up to do an interview in the ring, and he says to you, now, before we go to the guy with the mustache, he's telling this, and he's your producer. He's telling you this stuff in your ear. So in other words, I just wanted to stop the harassment, so that's why I gave up. I acquiesced, but the bottom line is I got $200 to do so. I wouldn't have done it without it. Bottom line is you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing and MMA. The reason why I'm bringing that up is that I got chided by somebody who was Jewish for mentioning the fact the guy was Jewish. If he was black, I would have mentioned he was black. If he was Irish, I would have mentioned he was Irish. Latino, same thing. I don't get that. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC with Pedro Fernandez. In the ground. Sooner later there won't be none around. Ultimate sources of power must be found. Cause there's only so much oil in the ground.
Ah, the trumpet of the late great Mick Gillette. Probably the greatest four notes on a trumpet in music. Tower of Power, of course. You're Still a Young Man, a million seller back from 1972. May he rest in peace. Mick Gillette was a class act. May he rest in peace. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Let's talk next week's fight, of course. Tim Tszyu. Remember Tim Tszyu? I remember Kostyuszyn, his father, of course, the former world junior welterweight champion. His claim to fame was being the champion that Oscar De La Hoya wouldn't go nowhere near, not even in the same town, the same city, the same state, same arena. No way, no how. And the bottom line is De La Hoya ducked him. But Kostyuszyn, of course, was the guy that fought Zab Judah, and Zab Judah got mad at the referee and threw the ring stool, tried to throw the stool at the referee, Jay Nady. Trying to do that to the wrong referee, because Jay Nady, one time we were in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and somebody snatched a purse on the street, and Jay Nady ran the dude down. Jay Nady's like 6'5", 260, and he ran 255, and lean, and he ran this dude down and beat his arse. I kid you not, he did. So the guy snatched a purse. This is not the guy to be messing around with. Anyway, Zab Judah did that night. Kostyuszyn, of course, now has his son, Tim Tszyu. It was 19-0, 15 KOs. He's supposed to be a junior middleweight to take notice of. The bottom line is, you know, Australia doesn't have that many fighters. They just don't. So every now and then we get a fighter out of there that has a decent record. They build him up right, and we think great things. But the bottom line is Tim Tszyu, of course, may not be a chip off the old block. Anyway, he's taking on Takahashi Inoue. And I think Inoue is related to the monster Inoue. This guy's 17-1 with 10 KOs. You know, he wants to talk about fighting at 160, 168 pounds. This Japanese guy is going to be all that he can handle. He'll probably roll over him easily. Another fight next week is going to take place, and I'm not too high on this one at all because it's Terrence Crawford, the aforementioned guy from Omaha, Nebraska. Man, Larry Merchant straightened me out on that one, didn't I? He couldn't sell 5,000 seats in Omaha. Okay, he can sell 17,000 seats in Omaha, but not for any money. In other words, you know, the gates aren't nothing. He ain't going to make a $7 million gate in Omaha, Nebraska. not going to do it. Okay, just not going to do it. So anyway, bottom line is he didn't bring in the kind of butts and the money that I think a real world champion, in other words, a guy that's supposed to be a superstar who portrays himself as a boxing superstar, should be doing. Okay, now he's going to take on Sean Porter. That's 37 and zip, 28 KOs, champion at 135, 140, 147. But what's the biggest name on his record thus far? The guy is going to fight next week, Sean Porter. Sean Porter, 31-3. I think he's got one draw and 17 KOs. Not a puncher, a volume type of guy. Guys get heavily muscled and that kind of good stuff. But, you know, I don't think this is going to be much be a big upset or anything like that. Should Sean Porter win? I just don't think that Terrence Crawford's all that the great fighter that Hector and all these guys, they fawn over his skills. Yeah, but look at the guys he's been lumping up. I mean, the greatest guy in his record is probably, I'll look back at it, the greatest guy in his record, I think, is Yuri Gamboa. I mean, Kell Brook, some guy named Edgaris Cavaliscus, of course, he was undefeated. Amir Khan, who's really Amir Khan. Jose Benavidez was 27 and zip. Jeff Horn, you know, come on. Are there any of these guys, like, are these guys going to be, like, in the International Boxing Hall of Fame because they deserve to be there? No, Jeff Horn might get there because of the fact that he was in Australia, he was from Australia, and he beat Manny Pacquiao in a disputable decision. But outside of that, I'm looking at the rest of his record, John Molina Jr., Victor Postal, Henry Lundy. These guys are all decent fighters, but they're decent. They're not great. None of these guys were great fighters. None of these guys were the Hall of Fame fighters that Terrence Crawford wants to be. I mean, I told you, in Cuba, he's telling me on his boat he wants to be like Hagler and Duran and Leonard and Hearns and this and that. Well, you've got to fight guys like Leonard, Duran, Hearns, and, you know, people of that ilk. But he doesn't think so. He thinks you can get there mainly on quantity and not quality. Therefore, Terrence Crawford has taken the quantity, in other words, as many fights as I can get, make as much money as I can, forget taking the risk, because if he really wanted to take the risk and make some money, he would have done it with Errol Spence. I mean, if ever there was a time to fight Errol Spence, it was right now or like 6 months ago. Because the bottom line is, Errol Spence, of course, got tossed out of that car at 115 miles an hour. He'll never be the same. I don't care what you say. I mean, I would make sure he knew about it. When we were in the ring together, I'd be talking to him in the clinches. I would be blowing his mind. But the bottom line is, he'll never be the same. He flipped out of a car. He had a brain bleed.
Oh, how do you know he had a brain bleed, Pedro? You're not a doctor. How do you know?
Because I looked at the picture. And when you looked at that picture, that mugshot he took for being under the influence of alcohol, it was like, blew way over the limit. Of course, had a gun in the car that was worth $10,000, a $10,000 handgun. Yeah, that's Errol Spence. Anyway, so he gets tested out of the car at 150 miles an hour. But when they did the mugshot photo, and this was after, you know, he'd been released from the hospital, obviously, you could see that his the area around the one eyeball, the one around the pupil, it was all bloody. That means he had a brain bleed. That means it was a severe concussion. That means he didn't walk away with this just like a bruise. He was hurt. He was hurt. I'm telling you, he'll never be the same. If there's a guy you want to fight right now at 147, it's Errol Spence, okay? And what does Crawford say? No, man, they don't give me 60% of the money. I don't want no part of it. And that's what he said. Who the hell are you to demand 60% of anything? What have you done outside of what Larry Merchant said, drawing a bunch of people in Omaha, Nebraska? Big deal. Omaha. Biggest thing about Omaha is you and the fact that Sun World Airlines, when they were running back about 25 years ago, used to offer you free trips to Omaha, Nebraska. I never knew why, but every time I got on a plane and they were looking for somebody to get off, to beg somebody to get off to go to Vegas, we'd be on these sold-out flights to Vegas, said, we will give you a round-trip ticket to Omaha, Nebraska. And the lady said, Omaha one time. I said, huh? What's Omaha? Is that a new town, though? She meant Omaha, she was reading off a paper. But the bottom line is, I never understood that. I guess they were trying to get people to go to Omaha. Anyway, the bottom line is, Terrence, 37 and zip. Maybe going to go 38 and zip with his win over Sean Porter. He's favored significantly over Porter, probably a 3.5, 4-1 favorite. Okay, when you're fighting 4-1 guys, are you being challenged? Can you get to that Marvin Hagler level? Can you get to that Roberto Duran level? Can you get to that Sugar Ray? You can't. You can't do it. You can't do it just with quantity. Yeah, you have to have some quality to it. You know, I can go on and on, but the bottom line is Terrence Crawford, he's missing the boat here. He really thinks his spit doesn't stink and all that kind of good stuff. Spit with an H, of course. He thinks his spit doesn't stink. And I guess you can be confident. You can be cocky, this and that, but you also got to face the reality that Yuri Gamboa, when the biggest name on your dance card was Yuri Gamboa, that doesn't say a whole lot about your ability as a professional boxer. And the fact that, you know, has Crawford sold tickets outside of Omaha? Larry didn't bring that up. I mean, you don't see him Aaron putting them in the garden. You don't see him putting them in Madison Square Garden, Staples Arena, nothing like that. Why? Because he can't draw. Bob was talking about that about a year and a half ago. He goes, why should I pay Terrence Crawford all this money when he doesn't make it back for me? Why should I have to lose money? Aaron was implying that he's losing money every time he promotes Terrence Crawford. Well, what does that say? It says that, you know, people don't maybe want to spend money, or Terrence Crawford's not a pay-per-view type of fighter. You have to be special to attract people to pay-per-view. In other words, look at Canelo Alvarez. You know, people don't bat an eye to pay $5, $10, $30, $40, whatever it is, $80 to watch a Canelo fight on pay-per-view. Why? Because Canelo has earned it. Now, would you want to pay $80 to watch Sean Porter and Terrence Crawford go at it? Probably not, but they're going to put this on pay-per-view anyway. Of course, that's the only way I think they can make any money as far as coming up with these purses. Because remember, on pay-per-view, they don't have to sell a lot of homes. I mean, if you were to sell 100,000 homes on pay-per-view at $50 a pop, right? That's a lot of money. That's $5 million, right? Well, you split that with the cable company. So right off the bat, you've got $2.5 million. That covers the purse of your fighters if you had to pay each guy back $1 million. Now, I don't think Sean Porter is going to get $1 million. I think he's getting close to it, but he's going to get $1 million. Probably get about 800 grand. Maybe I'm wrong. And I think that Terrence Crawford will walk away with about 1.4, 1.5, maybe 1.8 at the tops. Because he just, if you can't sell tickets, why do you demand? How can you demand all this kind of money? Terrence Crawford can't sell tickets outside of Omaha, Nebraska, or Omaha, Nebraska, or whatever you want to call it. But the bottom line is, when you sell tickets at $15 a head, so what? No big thing there. I mean, you're not a ticket seller. He's not a draw outside of Omaha, and the people that want to spend $15 to $25 to go watch him, and you know, outside of that, he's not a draw. There's no doubt about it. Now, as far as big-time boxing is concerned, of course, the heavyweight division has always ruled boxing. He who rules the heavyweight division has ruled boxing for the most part. But then again, there came a guy by the name of Sugar Ray Leonard. Before that, there was Sugar Ray Robinson. Of course, these were guys that were not heavyweights, but they controlled the boxing world. Roberto Duran, Thomas Hearns, Marvin Hagler. These guys were not heavyweights, but, you know, those guys controlled the boxing world. Right now, we've got Tyson Fury, and I heard Larry Merchant talk a little earlier about Jim Lampley saying that Tyson Fury was just a big flabby fat guy, a big flabby bum to an extent. And, you know, maybe Jim's got a point there. Maybe Jim's got a point there. But the bottom line is he keeps winning. He's got the pedigree. I mean, he really hasn't lost too many fights in his entire life, even as an amateur. I think he lost 3 or 4 fights. But outside of that, he hasn't lost as a professional, and he hasn't even come close to losing as a professional. I'm talking about Tyson Fury. So you can knock Tyson Fury's preparation. I don't think he's as dedicated as he probably should be. But then again, you know, fighters don't train the way that I think they should train. I mean, I train like an animal for a 3-round fight. Guys don't train. I've been around guys that don't. They train marketably less than I did as far as intensity was concerned, and they're fighting 6 and 8 rounds in 10-round fights. How do they do it? I don't know. But the bottom line is I put forth my time in the gym. If you don't put forth your time in the gym, it's not going to pay off as far as the eventual premium screen. You want to make yourself a premium fighter. Now, Terrence Crawford, premium by numbers, not by greatness. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Next up, I'll intro it after the break, but the bottom line is we'll spend some time with the explosive thin man, El Explosivo Flaco. I'm talking about Alexis Arguello, right here on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC-TV. You're listening to Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez, brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC, right here on Sports Violence.
Let's do it. Anybody who wants to fight, let's go. She seemed to know the reason why. She said, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Yeah.
A little knowledge is a dangerous thing, baby.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
I wanted to do the right thing.
You know, every time I talk about Alexis Arguello, I get emotional. I just do. I mean, he was like the explosive thin man to a lot of people, but to me, he was like a baby. I don't mean like a baby, like, and that kind of stuff, but he was just so tender emotionally. I mean, you know, I mean, he had emotional issues like you would not believe, and he lacked self-confidence a lot of ways. I mean, things that you would not expect coming from one of the most charismatic fighters ever graced the planet. I'm talking about the man, of course, who went 77-8 as a professional, 62 KOs, won titles at like 126 pounds, 130 pounds, 135 pounds, but he failed at 140 pounds. And of course, you know, he had a great run, and I remember going up to see him in one of his last big wins was in 86 when he fought Billy Costello up there in Reno, Nevada, of course, and he knocked Costello out quick style. I mean, that was probably his last great run in the sun. He had a couple fights after that loss, came back in 1996 and lost to Scott Walker, the late Scott Walker down there in Arizona. That was a bit of a surprise, but the bottom line is if he was getting beat by Scott Walker, he probably wasn't going to get ready to, like, rumble with anybody of significance, especially a third time with Aaron Pryor. Plus, Aaron Pryor and him had gotten to such a point in life that they were doing crack cocaine together in Miami, Florida. I mean, that was a little frightening. I mean, think about that. These guys are like adversaries. These guys are having the most bitter battles of all time, the fight of 1982, without a doubt, you know, and Alexis telling me how to get mentally tough and that kind of stuff. I'll never forget that kind of stuff. But the fight of the year in 1982, of course, Alexis and Pryor going back and forth, the special bottle, a special mix that Panama Lewis put together, the fact that the gloves were tampered with. I mean, Arguello had everything going against him, and yet he lost, but that broke him down mentally. And eventually, I think it played a part in the fact that his life ended sooner rather than later. The bottom line is, we're going to go back in time and spend some time with Alexis Arguello. He was very happier with a CBS television commercial.
In Nicaragua, they love their boxing. And you don't have to look far at all to find a match or two on any Saturday night. There have been lots of local heroes here at the Cranshaw Outdoor Stadium, names like Kid Pascualito, Nacho Lamelli, Tancasito Gonzalez. It is a boxing-crazed country. And if you can't make it out for a couple of beers and a long card, you can listen to the action on the local radio station. It used to be they never had much to cheer about in this Central American country, but they do now. Because this is the homeland of Alexis Arguello.
In fact, it was here in this outdoor boxing ring in central Managua where Alexis Arguello had his very first professional fight. For his work, he earned himself $40. But more importantly, he earned the respect of the Nicaraguan boxing experts who looked up into the night at that skinny little kid in the ring and said, "Finally, we have our champion."
The champion is in Miami now, training for his 80th and perhaps most important professional fight. He is in pursuit of something that has never been done before, a fourth world title. He is obsessed. There are no distractions in this broken-down neighborhood gym in Miami. No loud music to pump him up. No cheering section to massage his ego. No, this is far too serious. He talks to nobody. Conditioning is everything. A boxer's body is his weapon, conditioning. This is a time for intensity, not levity. The laughing and joking is for outside the gym.
What a hand.
This is the Alexis Arguello fight fans don't and wouldn't pay to see. He's a nice guy, gentle, compassionate, a family man.
The main thing is I'm going to give a good education.
Pretty good storyteller, laughs at everybody else's.
I don't tell bad jokes.
You look at him and you say to yourself, this is the guy who slam dunks professional fighters into the mat?
I know.
This guy has had 62 knockouts?
Your friends like this, who needs enemies?
This is the great and feared Alexis Arguello? Don't be fooled. This act stops at the ropes. Inside, Dr. Jekyll turns into Mr. Hyde.
I've only seen one other fighter that had this effect on his opponent. That was Joe Louis. He was so mild-mannered and so soft-spoken outside the ring.
He disarms people
But when he gets in the ring and he hits him for the first time, they cannot believe how strong he is.
They have no idea until they get hit that first shot. And no matter where it hits them, anywhere, then they know. They know, wow, what am I in here with?
After the beatings, there is always the Alexis Arguello trademark. Console the opponent. The nice guy reappears. It's been that way since he took his first title away from Ruben Olivares in 1974, and since then he's collected two more with a stunning 76-4 record. He's been around long enough to even knock out kids who idolized him when they were growing up. 76-4, three world titles. You'd think he'd be a household name. He isn't. Not yet.
I swear to God, if I born in America, and the American people is not that easy. You have to prove. You have to go prove step by step who you are. Leonard to win two titles, to have less fight than I got, is Jesus. Now with me, with 80 fight, three world titles, that's the only difference. I'm not American.
Well, last year he went into the ring with one of America's favorites, Boom Boom Mancini, who was trying to get the title his father never got when he was a fighter. In the end, Arguello almost came out the bad guy. But when it was over, fight fans across America were treated to something they seldom see.
You two guys are a credit to what it's all about. Here is the challenger, Ray Mancini. Come on in here.
Good.
That's what we're talking about.
Thank you, sir.
Ray Mancini.
I love you, father. That's the most beautiful thing you have, like I have my father. Take good care of you.
While Ray Mancini's father watched the fight at ringside, Arguello's father was at home in Nicaragua. He still lives in the same house in Managua where Alexis was born. And on a Sunday morning, there are almost always visitors, and the conversation most always is about that skinny kid who used to live here.
I can never take that part of my life away from me. Never. Not even if I want to do it.
Alexis grew up in this neighborhood, and while his father made and repaired shoes, his mother delivered them. It was here in these streets where Alexis Arguello had his first fights, the ones with no ring, bell, ref, or gloves. Not the kind of place many people are able to break out of. Those things are usually for movies, books, and Alexis Arguello.
In really life, there's only two ways you can do it. It's you're doing good or doing bad. It's nothing in between. In a movie, you can project the end. But in life, I mean, if you take good care of yourself, nothing could happen.
Gunfire is the only sound to be heard as citizens stay indoors and the general business strike continues.
While he was away fighting, something did happen. The government was overthrown in a bloody revolution, and the old neighborhood turned into a war zone.
The Nicaragua's Sandinista guerrillas today savored a total victory over Anastasio Somoza.
The Sandinista government inherited was a country still trying to recover from the 1972 earthquake that killed thousands. For Arguello, this turn of events didn't fit in with his black and white world of training and conditioning. His younger brother was killed in the war, and in death became a national hero. He even had an avenue named in his honor. And the price Arguello paid? His family torn apart, never to be reunited. The gym he built for the neighborhood kids was seized by the government. And to add insult to injury, the Sandinistas outlawed professional boxing. And even worse, they named Arguello's gym for his brother, tying the Arguello name to the revolution Alexis didn't support. They took everything, seized his dream home, evicted his mother and sister at gunpoint. Arguello will not return to see what is left over, the poverty, the people waiting and watching for a better life that never came as promised. Even though he hasn't been home in 3 years, he hasn't been forgotten. In the marketplace, they still sell Alexis Arguello T-shirts with an imprint of optimism showing four crowns, not three. It is as though he never left.
He's a national hero now. But if Alexis
sometime comes to Nicaragua, I can guarantee you that maybe 200,000 or 300,000 of people is going to the airport to receive him.
Quite frankly, Arguello is afraid to go home.
Just think about that 200,000 people to kill a man, just be just one. You know, the government can send somebody in the airport and a good gun. And,
do you think that happened?
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Do you worry about that up here? Do you think that they would send somebody up here?
Oh, yeah. I miss my family a lot, but, you know, just... I cannot come back to my country for the problem. You know, they want to stay there. They've been living in there for all his life, you know.
His mother tried living with Arguello in the States but didn't like Miami, so now she sits at home with her memories.
Is it hard for you all the time because Alexis is gone?
But he is a knockout victim by the champion Alexis Arguello, who has successfully defended his championship for the third time.
Well, right now I have the respect for my country, because I'm a Nicaraguan, but I have a respect for this country. And all in my life, America would be part of my history.
The Alexis Arguello story always brings us back here to Nicaragua, an embattled country still trying to get over the earthquake, still trying to get past the revolution, which produced its own political heroes and martyrs. But you have to understand, there's only been one ídolo, one idol. Alexis Arguello is their national hero. And despite the millions, the Mercedes, the yacht, all the trappings of American success, Arguello will never forget Nicaragua. In fact, he will never forget this place, the ring where he had his very first professional fight. And back then, it was a basic struggle for survival. So there he is, working for something nobody has done before, four titles. And in his black and white world, confident, he'll get it. Pat O'Brien, CBS Sports.
You know, I was with Alexis and where he had the fight, the first fight. He took me to all the different places in Managua, Nicaragua, when I was down there with him. Of course, I went down there because of the fact that he talked on the show about committing suicide. And this was like 1999. And, of course, he was having some cocaine issues. His wife, Patricia Barreto, she was a nice lady. She came on the show and she said, you know, Alexis is smoking something out of a can, a Coca-Cola can. So she doesn't. She goes. She thought he was smoking coke because it was a coke can. Well, yeah, he was smoking. He was smoking crack. But the bottom line is, of course, Alexis denied it. I went down to Nicaragua with the blessings of Don Jose Suleiman, the president of the World Boxing Council, and $30,000. Suleiman gave me $30,000. I said, go down there, get Alexis, take him to the United States, put him in rehab, rent a house for him in San Francisco. I'm putting you in charge of Alexis Arguello. You got to go down there and help El Flaco Explosivo, please, Pedro. Because he's the only one, he'll listen to you maybe. So I went down there hoping that he would listen to me. In fact, we spent a week together and I did all kinds of crazy stuff down there. We had fun, went to strippers and this stuff that guys do. And then it came like the night before I was going to leave, the day before I was leaving, we had this confrontation together. In other words, what I mean confrontation is I brought his priest and Miss Barreto, who was Mrs. Arguello at the time, beautiful lady. His kid was there. We put the kid in the other room. Brought like three or four of his close friends. And then we all confronted him over the cocaine. And he said, look, I'm not a junkie. I'm not a junkie. He kept screaming, Pedro, I'm not a junkie. I don't have a needle. But he was smoking crack cocaine. He couldn't tie it the two together, okay? And then, of course, he said, he sent me on my way. He took me to the airport the next day and, you know, put his hand on my shoulder, gave me a hug, this and that. And then I saw him about a year later. But before I saw him a year later, he was arrested on New Year's Eve for drunk driving by the Nicaraguan government. It told him either you go to rehab or you go to jail. He went to rehab, and when I saw him about 9 or 10 months later at the International Boxing Hall of Fame in Kennesaw, New York, you know what he told me? He told me, Pedro, you saved my life. Right on, Alexis. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You just
fall down. I hope that you understand that not one single person, not one single committee can do anything for us. It is absolutely necessary that we all get together, we work together, we respect each other, we like and love each other.
You're listening to Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez, brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC, right here on Sports Byline. Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Good to see you're still alive. I think I like you.
Want to thank FightHype.com for that Benavides clip and, of course, CBS Sports for the Alexis Arguello tribute there, of course. You know, Alexis, I didn't talk about his demise. I'll stay away from that. But the bottom line is the hardest he was ever hit in his entire life was by Andy Gannigan. Andy Gannigan was considered one of the top 50 punchers in the history of boxing, according to Ring Magazine a few years ago. Anyway, Andy Gannigan was a Hawaiian puncher, a southpaw. Again, a southpaw. He got hit the hardest by a southpaw. I got to hit the hardest by a southpaw, Ernie Chavez. Pat Lawler got to hit the hardest by Joe Calzaghe, a southpaw. What I'm telling you is, when you get hit from the opposite side, it seems like it's a whole lot harder. Now, next week, Demetrius Andrade and Jason Quigley, the WBO 160-pound title. Terrence Crawford's going to go on the 20th, of course, with Sean Porter. That's going to be on pay-per-view. What am I looking for the rest of the schedule? Of course, the man, Teofimo Lopez. Is he the man or is he the girl? Is he the boy? What's he going to do? Is he going to defend at 135 or is he going to be a puss and run to 140? Bottom line is, he puts his undefeated title on the line against George Kambosos November 27th on DAZN. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. If you're joining me for the very first time, let me welcome you to the Ring Talk family. If you're new, you've been around 37, 38 plus years now, you know what time it is. Thank you so much for your time. Don't forget, we are now coming to you live on VTV. Hello, VTV!